Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast, after a two-week hiatus, is back with you. The holidays are over. We hope you had a good one. 2019 is here. The Bucks rang it in great holiday style. They win in New York in the Garden on Christmas Day, and then they start off the new year on the good foot with the win over the Detroit Pistons in the middle of this long homestand at Fiserv Forum. The Bucks are the best team in the NBA, everybody. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am your host for the Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast, and I'm joined on the other line by Matt Velasquez. He is the Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering your Milwaukee Bucks, the number one team, the best team in the National Basketball Association. Matt, it's been a sight to behold. Are the Bucks ever going to lose again?
At some point, I feel pretty confident in saying that at some point, yes, they will lose again. They are playing very well, winners of 8 of 9 and 4 in a row, and they have this nice 6-game homestand here to take us from 2018 to 2019. But yeah, they are playing some really good basketball and getting a lot of contributions from up and down the roster, and it's definitely been a sight to behold.
They'll play the Hawks on Friday night. That is a team that the Bucks should definitely beat. And as we've seen lately, they handle the teams that they're supposed to handle, which has been a nice easy thing for Bucks fans to endure. Raptors coming into town on Saturday. That's going to be a big one. The Raptors heading into play on Wednesday. The Raptors were really just a half game behind the Bucks. So even though we can say Milwaukee's got the best record in the NBA, the Raptors are right there also. And we're going to talk a little bit about Toronto as well, and which teams right now represent the biggest threat to Milwaukee. But Matt, I think and we haven't talked in a while, so we haven't talked since they went to Boston and won a game. And there's just this great feeling of knowing that the Bucks have beaten a lot of these other great teams in the NBA. Like, they've beaten Denver twice. That's the best team in the West. They've beaten Toronto a couple times. That's their chief competitor in the East. They've won it. They've won at Boston. They've won at Golden State. They've beaten the teams they're supposed to, and beaten some of these teams that you figure would still be in a tier ahead of Milwaukee. I mean, right now, I know we've asked this question in some way, shape, or form before, but are the Bucks the best team in the NBA? I mean, at some point, you got to look around and say, yeah, they're the best team in the NBA, and it isn't even just the record, it's the way they've played. They honestly have a case right now to be the team to beat in the forthcoming NBA playoffs.
I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. I think I'm going to stick with the answer that I've said. I think every time I've been asked this question is, the Warriors are the best team in the NBA until someone beats them in June. Like, that's really, you know, what it comes down to. Maybe someone could beat them before June, but with them getting Boogie back and just having the vast array of shooters that they have and players that they have, having two former MVPs, you know, a whole bunch of all-stars, you know, two of the best shooters of all time. They're still the best team. I think everybody in the NBA, you know, you can look at the Bucks and say, yes, like, they have the best point differential and they have the best net rating and they have the MVP front runner in Giannis Antetokounmpo. Like, they have all the makings of a great team. But they're still not the Warriors. They're still not the defending champs. They're still not the team that has, you know, two former MVPs and, you know, they're a great story. But right now in the East, I mean, it's kind of anybody's conference. You know, you look at what the Bucks have done, and they've been great, but Toronto's right there with them. The Indiana Pacers have been, you know, just as hot as the Bucks, winners of 8 of their last 10, including 5 in a row. You know, and they've been playing some stifling defense, as the Bucks saw back in December. And then you still have the 76ers looming and the Celtics looming, and those top 5 teams, it's just going to be fantastic to watch them kind of shake things out in the playoffs, because, you know, whoever that 4-5 matchup is, that's going to be just a bloodbath. And then whatever happens in the in the second round, I mean, there's going to be some awesome matchups with some, you know, great teams that are trying to prove that, you know, they can go somewhere. LeBron James isn't in the East anymore, so the path is wide open for everybody, and it's just a function of who could be healthy, who could be playing the best basketball at that point. And I think we're going to be treated to some really fun matchups.
Yeah, we've talked a little about how the Raptors are sort of the chief competition in the East, but the Pacers have really shown, like you just said, that they're a force to be reckoned with, and the Bucks have won 8 of 9, and that one loss came against Indiana, and it was one of those rare moments.
The one loss was against the Heat.
Oh, shoot. Earlier, I'm jumping to a previous loss.
But the Bucks have won 11 of the last 14, and one of those losses was to the Pacers.
Yeah, the loss in Miami. And before that, that loss in Indiana is, again, one of the few times this year that you can say the Bucks really were never going to win that game. It wasn't a last-second shot or anything, or a flourish in the fourth quarter. The Bucks, you know, they lost that game. And Indiana is looking like a team that can match up pretty well with them. How concerned should the Bucks be about that team? I mean, is that a matchup that could potentially be, from what you've seen, particularly problematic, more so maybe than Toronto? Or is it really still, you know, is it really still the Raptors that you look at when you say who are the best teams in the East besides Milwaukee?
Well, I think when it comes to Indiana, the Bucks are going to have to figure out how to operate against their defense, which has been one of the, I think it's right now second in the NBA net rating, and that's throughout the whole season. But more recently, it's been just totally lights out, shutting everybody down. Including the Bucks in that December game. And in that game, you know, Giannis really didn't get anything going. He only took like 6 field goal attempts. Chris Middleton was in the midst of his, probably one of the deepest points of his slump. And as a team, they couldn't hit anything. And so it was one of those games where I think Giannis had 3 assists on 18 assist opportunities, if my memory serves correct. And that's just not going to happen most nights. But at the same time, they have to figure it out. The one thing that's definitely in the Bucks' favor is that as we talked today on January 2nd, the Bucks are 8-1 in the Central Division. Which, if it came down to it, if the Bucks and Pacers ended up being tied, and if they split the season series right now, the series is 1-1. They have obviously 2 games left. If they split the season series and they were tied in the record-wise, their record in division would be the thing that would split them up. And so the Bucks are 8-1 in the Central. The Pacers are 5-2. So that's one thing in the Bucks' favor. But I think that overall it'd probably be fair to say that the Bucks have a more talented roster than the Pacers. But the Pacers just keep coming at you. I mean, they are relentless. They are a hardworking team that is totally bought in on the defensive end. When Miles Turner is hitting threes like he has been recently, and he definitely did against the Bucks, he provides a much tougher matchup for those pick and pop situations, throwing up those rainbow daggers, and it's going to be really fun to see those teams square off again over the last their last 2 times during the season, and really, I mean, you could point to the Raptors, Pacers, Sixers, and Celtics. All of those teams have elements that would make them a really tough matchup for the Bucks, and the Pacers are no exception.
Pretty impressive what the Pacers have done. I think the last sort of star they've had was Paul George. So they're doing this with guys that not a lot of casual fans around the NBA know of. And certainly coming into the year, it was seen as the race between the Raptors, Sixers, Celtics. Maybe the Bucks were in there too from a national perspective. I don't think anybody was talking about Indiana, but they certainly should be now. Speaking of rainbow daggers or just shots from deep, Brooke Lopez, consecutive games now with 7 three-pointers made. I believe, did I see a stat that's the first time a center has done that in NBA history? Is that right?
Yeah, I think I saw the same stat. Ridiculous. It's mind-boggling.
It really is. I'm still confounded by how the difference between Jason Kidd and Mike Budenholzer can open things up so dramatically for a team. But that does sort of, that does take for granted a little bit the contributions of that Brook Lopez has made, and being able to stretch the floor the way he does with the way he's able to make shots from deep, hit a crazy 30-footer against Detroit, kind of this turnaround three-point shot that no center has any business making, and he's doing it with ease. Is Brook Lopez an all-star at this point? Because at some point, you look at his numbers and you say to yourself, my goodness, he might be the second-best player on this Bucks team. It's crazy how important he has been to what Milwaukee has done this season.
Yeah, I was kind of spitballing and trying to figure out, if you're going to have big men on the All-Star team, who in the East is going to make it there? And I was kind of just going team by team, and it's okay, well, the Raptors, I don't think there's maybe anybody there. The Pacers, there's a case to be made for maybe Miles Turner or Domantas Sabonis. Sabonis has been awesome off the bench all year, but I don't know if that'll pan out. Obviously, Joel Embiid, he'll probably get the fan vote. He'll probably start. I mean, that makes the most sense. He's been a monster. He's been awesome. That's kind of easy pickings. You know, then you go to the Celtics, like Al Horford, like, okay, well, maybe, you know, that's kind of like the veteran pick, but, you know, it's not like he's doing anything different than he's done. He's been injured a little bit. And kind of just going to the line, I couldn't figure out any teams that had centers or big men that were really deserving of an all-star nod other than, you know, when you look at Orlando, it's okay, well, Orlando's getting crazy numbers for Vucevic, and he's been really good, so maybe he can make a run at the all-star team, maybe by the coach or the player vote. But Brook Lopez, in terms of centers in the East, I mean, he's right there. I mean, if I told you on January 2nd, 2019, that Brook Lopez and Klay Thompson would have made the same number of three-pointers, and I told you that before the season, you would say that I was insane. Like, that's you know, kind of just how it, and Klay's had two more games. So, you know, Brook Lopez has more threes per game than Klay Thompson on January 2nd, 2019.
That's preposterous. I mean, that's... That makes no sense.
That's a real thing. That's a real thing. And you know, Brook is at 95 threes. That puts him in the top 10 in the NBA in three-pointers made this season.
This guy was a true center up until like 3 years ago. I mean, he was a back-to-the-basket center, and then everything changed.
And he was really good at it. He was an all-star. Like, it's not like he was like some center who like couldn't get the job done inside, and so he was forced to, you know, step out in order to stay relevant. No, he was a relevant center already. Like, he was a good player. And then, you know, Kenny Atkinson, whose Nets team just came to Fiserv Forum, he came in as the coach of the Brooklyn Nets, and he's like, hey, Brook, here's how we want to play. You know, obviously Kenny Atkinson was a disciple of Mike Budenholzer. He was an assistant coach under Bud in Atlanta. He said, here's how we want to play. We want to spread the floor out. We want you to shoot the three. And Brook said, okay. And Kenny Atkinson, you know, even now is still praising Brook for his work ethic. He's like, oh yeah, you know, people don't see all the hours that he put in, all the time that he spent, you know, kind of busting his hump in the gym, getting his 3-point shot in order and making it an actual weapon. And this year, in his third year of actually shooting threes at a high rate, he's definitely been weaponized. You know, just he stands out by the hash mark. He's like a 30 feet out, and he's setting up camp there, and he's daring teams to either leave him wide open or open up space, you know, by guarding him, come out and guard him, and that's going to make the other team essentially, you know, have to play without their rim protector, and that's going to open up driving lanes for Giannis, for Bledsoe, for Middleton, Brogdon, everybody. And so that's kind of the pick your poison situation there, you know, with Lopez. And on New Year's night, after their game against the Pistons, when he made 7 3-pointers on 12 attempts, you know, including a couple in the fourth quarter where the crowd was like getting hyped before he even shot it. You know, Mike Budenholzer was asked, like, what do you think about when he's shooting those shots? And, you know, Bud's reply was just basically, you know, well, I feel like some of them are bad shots and then they go in. So I have to like go back to the bench and sit down. You know, which, you know, which when Brook heard about that, he loved it. He's like, oh, that's exactly what I want to hear. I want to hear about Bud sitting down and not talking. You know, and he was laughing and everybody was happy and Giannis was playing some random Greek rap and the locker room was just a very happy place to be, and as it should be when you're 26-10.
Brook Lopez shaping up to be one of the best free agent signings, offseason acquisitions in general for any team in the NBA. Kenny Atkinson had to be a bystander when the Bucks took down the Nets on December 29th, 129-115. That's one of Lopez's 7 3-point games. Bucks really haven't been tested in any of their last four games, in any of these four wins. Possibly the closest game was that Christmas Day game at Madison Square Garden against the Knicks when the Bucks pulled ahead for a 109-95 victory. Of course, that's the first time in a couple decades we've seen the Bucks play on Christmas Day. They busted out those earned edition jerseys, which will be retired with an undefeated record, having won these last four games. What are some of your takeaways from that Christmas Day occasion? It was the first game of the day, sort of an early tip-off with the Knicks and the... Yeah, it wasn't always pretty, but the Bucks did pull away in the end for the victory. What are some of the lasting, you know, the resonant images that you have in your head from that game with the Bucks back on Christmas Day?
Well, I mean, Giannis was Giannis, and that's That's really the story. I mean,
yeah, end of book. Yeah. There it is. Giannis.
Yeah. I mean,
the end.
Yeah, Giannis was Giannis. The Knicks didn't have a Giannis. Actually, Thon Maker had a nice game that day. Really scoring in different ways. A lot of times this year, he's been a corner three maker, and kind of a guy who can drop in layups. Or he's had a few more dunks this year than he's had in the past. But he was busting out some different moves. You know, making shots from different spots in the court, looking confident, playing in rhythm. Also had a couple block shots. I mean that game, it was, like you said, it wasn't that close. The Bucks had it was a tight first half. Both teams, you know, early start, kind of feeling each other out. You know, the Bucks didn't really get going offensively, and then Giannis happened, and the Bucks kind of really kicked into high gear in that third quarter, or outscored the Knicks 36-22, and that was it. That was as close as it was going to get. They made it the Knicks tried to make it interesting a couple times in the fourth, but it never really got to anything. It was a pretty one-sided affair. I was kind of thrown off, and I guess this should be expected for the early game on Christmas, but it was quiet at Madison Square Garden. Like, it wasn't that interesting of a game or exciting of a game, but it was kind of just eerily quiet at certain points. When they weren't piping in like music and stuff, you just have, you know, nice quiet morning of basketball, and it was very unusual. But it was an interesting experience. It's always fun to be in New York, especially at Christmas time. And it was cool to check out Rockefeller Center and the tree. It's something I've done a few times in the past. And it was definitely a nice little trip there.
Giannis has been happening on a regular basis. Triple doubles are pretty much not even a thing that are going to make fans raise their eyebrows at this point. We talk about him obviously quite a bit, although not maybe as much as we could. Who else is even in the conversation for NBA MVP at this point? I mean, is this a done deal? If Giannis didn't play again, would he win the MVP? I mean, obviously not. But outside of maybe like James Harden, I mean, who else is even close to what Giannis has done this year for winning that award?
Well, James Harden has been incredible recently. Just the numbers he's been putting up have been eye popping. The Rockets have been playing really well, and he's really just put him on his back. So, I mean, he would definitely, he already believes that he's on the way to defending his MVP title from last year. I think he said as much in a recent interview after a game that, you know, it kind of goes through him. Which, if he keeps playing at the way that he's playing right now, he's got a very strong argument. I mean, he's crushing it. And I know people have their different feelings about what it's like watching him play and if it's enjoyable or not, or if he gets fouled too often. The man is incredible. He is an elite scorer. He has just fantastic body control and shooting ability, and he just does like totally bonkers things. And, you know, I think that is all worth appreciating. Yes, I know he just sometimes will do like the double step back that definitely should be a travel.
Oh yes, it's a travel.
But that's just I think that's kind of for our benefit too. Because then we get all the memes, and the memes are worth something.
And the memes are definitely worth something in 2018, now 2019.
So you need to appreciate that. I think when it comes to the MVP conversation, you have to talk about Joel Embiid, who we talked about earlier in this podcast. I mean, like I said, he's been a monster. He's been the best center in the NBA all year. He's been healthy. He can play big minutes. He can hurt you inside and out. A lot of teams. I mean, the Bucks haven't seen Embiid since really early in the season, before the Sixers had Jimmy Butler, so we haven't gotten a chance to see the new look Sixers, you know, either at Pfizer Forum or out at the Wells Fargo Center. So I haven't seen them up close, but he's been looking just absolutely fantastic, and he's putting up big numbers to boot. I mean, the Sixers are right there in that top half of the East. And so obviously those things are important when considering an MVP race. And I feel like it's not really fair to talk about the MVP without mentioning LeBron James.
Who?
I mean,
who's that?
Just some guy. But he may not be playing right now. It's obviously a rare time where we're not seeing him as much due to that injury on Christmas. But he's always, liable to just put the team on his back and go off on just crazy stretches of scoring and rebounding and assists and all that stuff. And who knows if the Lakers have a deal in them around the trade deadline that maybe can make them more interesting and more compelling of a team. I mean, that said, they're still, you know, squarely in the playoff picture right now in the West. They're 21-16, 4 games back from the first place Nuggets. You know, so in the West, you could win 2 games or lose 2 games and go from like third to ninth or something or ninth to third. I mean, it's just kind of a crazy situation out there. But you know, you always have to mention him, and you know, you could always talk about Paul George, Steph Curry. I mean, there's plenty of people who are deserving of being in that conversation. But right now, I think it starts with Giannis, just for the way that he's been playing, putting up, you know, career best numbers basically across the board, and he has the Bucks with the best record in the NBA.
Yeah, I think we'll obviously talk a lot more about the MVP race as it heats up down the stretch, but I think you're right. LeBron James is like an Anthony Davis away from being maybe even the front runner for the MVP, because if he can lift the Lakers into the top seed in the West, or even top two seed, I think he's going to get a good long look. The one thing working in Giannis's favor is sort of the novelty of it. The Bucks haven't been in this headspace in quite some time, and you know, James Harden having won last year, and he's not an unlikable player. He's certainly a fun player to watch, but there are a lot of people out there who are not a fan of the double step, or whatever you want to call it, if you don't want to call it a travel, that might hurt his cause a little bit. And Giannis is being a very likable player. I think he's definitely going to get the lion's share of consideration at this point, but that is going to be an interesting race to watch as we come down the stretch, see where the Bucks are at as we get as we get closer and closer into the spring and into the summer. We talked briefly about DJ Wilson on the last podcast. At the time, he was sort of just kind of a fledgling, cool storyline. He was in the game and getting some big minutes. Kind of famously was on defense when Blake Griffin missed a couple late threes a previous game against the Pistons, where Wilson was in on defense. His defense has been really good, and it's only gotten better. I mean, DJ Wilson has not gone away. His number, his minutes continue to be strong. He's blossomed into a, you know, he's a key member of the rotation now, which I don't know if anybody saw coming before the season. I know we talked about him a little bit, but the DJ Wilson story has just gotten better and better, and now it's at a point where he's become pretty indispensable for the Bucks.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a really solid piece off the bench. It'll be interesting to see how they use him when Ersan Ilyasova comes back, which could be Friday, could be Saturday, coming off that broken nose that he suffered back on December 16th. But you know, DJ has really taken to his opportunity. He knew it would be coming at some point. He's been working on it. You know, he's been working all summer, working all off season. Mike Budenholzer and the coaching staff have had great things to say about him. They see him as somebody who can be part of the rotation, who can affect games. And now, like, you know, after they get to see all this behind closed doors, we're starting to get clued in, you know, to what they've been seeing and just the way that he, you know, is a lot more physical, rebounding. And it's something that maybe he shied away from contact a little bit last year. He knows his role on offense. He's spotting up the 3-point line. He's cutting when the attention is on other players, other guys with the ball. You know, he's obviously making his shots and just playing really tough defense. He knows that he needs to bring energy, and in the minutes that he does get, he needs to go all out every single second. And so far, you know, he's been doing that, you know, kind of ping-ponging around, helping out to defend different guys as the ball has moved and swung, and he's just attacking guys, you know, closing out hard, contesting, and generally making good decisions. So it's definitely been a positive for him and for the Bucks. And now Mike Budenholzer will have the difficult task of figuring out how to kind of shuffle the deck when Ilyasova comes back, because, you know, Ersan's a guy who Bud has said just this weekend that they want to get minutes for. They'll find minutes for him once he's healthy. So, you know, that's going to mean fewer minutes for somebody, and it's not going to be fewer minutes for Giannis, you know, those guys, you know, nominally play the same position. I don't think it's necessarily going to mean fewer minutes for Brook Lopez unless there's some kind of matchup where defensively, you know, he gets kind of played off the court. But, you know, that's going to mean that Ersan's going to be taking minutes from DJ or he's going to be taking them from Thon Maker. And, you know, trying to – and right now, Bud's been pretty consistent about going with a 10-man rotation. So, you know, who does that knock out of the rotation, you know, when Ersan comes back? Does that mean that there might be games where Wilson doesn't play at all or where Maker doesn't play at all? Or does he shorten up the guard rotation and decide to play bigger? I mean, there's just so many things that he has to figure out. And when we talked about it on Monday, he's like, yeah, I'm glad I have a few more days to figure that out. So he's not totally sure. But that wouldn't have been as big of an issue if DJ wasn't playing the way he is. And that's a credit to him.
Just amazing the depth that this team has cultivated. I mean, Dante DiVincenzo, who looks so good early in the season and certainly is a part of this team, a big part of it, but they have the luxury of giving him minutes in the D League. And certainly that's where DJ Wilson was at the beginning of the year, and now he's a key contributor. I don't think anybody could have predicted seeing this many contributors at such a high level, which obviously have helped this Bucks team become one of the best teams, and right now the best team in the NBA. Looking ahead at the schedule, like we mentioned, the Hawks on Friday night pay a visit to Milwaukee, and then the Raptors on Saturday. Curious your thoughts on that game. If it's a matchup the Bucks have won twice before this season, curious if you feel like this one has any particular added buzz because the two teams are competing for the top of the East, or to go back to our Bucks Rockets conversation with the MVP, what your thoughts are of that game coming up on Wednesday the 9th when the Bucks travel to Houston and we'll see a matchup of two top MVP candidates, Giannis and James Harden, going at it in Houston.
Yeah, I think the game against the Raptors will be great. I'm looking forward to it. You know, obviously the Bucks will be coming off a back-to-back playing against the Hawks on Friday. But the Raptors will have their own little emotional situation going on because on Thursday, so they're not playing a back-to-back, but on Thursday they're going to San Antonio for the DeMar DeRozan, Kawhi Leonard reunion game. Revenge tour, whatever you want to call it, but so that's going to be definitely an emotional game, a high intensity game down there in San Antonio, and then the Raptors will come up to Milwaukee for Saturday, and so that'll be, I mean, it's going to be an exciting week or the rest of the week for the NBA, but I'm looking forward to Saturday's game in part because you know these teams, you know, as much as they might not want to talk about it, They both know how important tiebreakers can be. And right now, the Bucks and Raptors are neck and neck atop the Eastern Conference standings. And the Bucks have won the first two games between those two teams. Granted, Kawhi Leonard didn't play in the first game, but you know the record still counts. So you know if the Bucks can win that game, they will clinch the season series against the Raptors, you know, which could be huge. That could be the difference between the one seed and the two seed or the two seed and the three seed, depending on how things shake out. But it could be, you know, the difference between hosting, a second round series or the conference finals or not. And so, if you know that there's definitely an added element to Saturday's game. And obviously, if you're the Raptors, you have a lot of personal pride and team pride that you don't want to go down 3-0 in the season series to your main rival right now atop the Eastern Conference. And so we'll have to see, you know, how that game shakes out and how both teams kind of get up for it. And that'll be just really, I think, a fun one. We've already had, you know, 15 sellouts in 20 games at Fiserv Forum. The Bucks are 17-3 at their new home court. And, you know, it should be a rocking atmosphere and a really fun time.
Maybe I'm even discounting the Bucks' own sort of revenge tour, if you will, with the Hawks coming in. That's Mike Budenholzer's previous stop, of course. He was the head coach in Atlanta the past five seasons. Things have gone better for Milwaukee with Budenholzer than they did in Atlanta with or without Budenholzer. So that's an interesting subplot as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be his first time going against his former team. You know, there's obviously been some turnover there. Not all the same guys, but there's a lot of... A lot of the same players that he has coached before, and you know it's something that I'm sure when we talk to Bud about it, he'll kind of downplay it, I'm sure.
Yes.
But you know it's something. We'll have to see the Trae Young and Kevin Herter rookie tour and see how those guys are shaping up. But the best situation the Bucks could hope for would be something akin to what they were able to do to the Pistons on Tuesday night, where they got a double-digit lead early in the second quarter, never let the margin slip back into single digits, and really just kind of put the game almost on cruise control for large segments of the second half. So if they can do that on Friday, keep everybody to 30 minutes or fewer like they were able to do against the Pistons, and stay rested heading into that game against the Raptors, I mean, that would be key.
Those games will be hot topics of conversation the next time we join Matt Velasquez for the Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast. He is, in fact, Matt Velasquez. You can find him on Twitter at Matt_Velasquez, VelazQuez. He's got you covered for the Milwaukee Bucks all season long. Thanks for joining us, Matt. It's been a fun ride so far. Now that we're in 2019, hard to believe we're still talking about a team at the front of the Eastern Conference standings. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, but here we are, and I'm looking forward to continuing all the fun Bucks talk through the rest of the season.
Find us on Apple Podcasts. Give us a review and a rating. 5 stars, of course, is what I mean by that. Or you can find us on Stitcher or Spotify. Thanks for checking us out this week. We will be back with you again, probably talking in advance of that Rockets game next week on the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again then.